Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-Pack Battery Kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Syria. Darkness visible. The failed state of Syria. Right now there are so many cross purposes in Syria that it is very, very, very helpful to have Bill Raggio as my colleague and co-host, keeping the Long War Journal as a senior fellow at the FTD, and his colleague, Ahmed Sharawi, who is now plunging into the Syria story, which continues to change. Ahmed writing most recently about the Druze and the HTS, now called the Syrian government in Damascus. I begin this conversation, however, with an anecdote of my own. One of the last times I visited Israel, and I broadcast over the last more than two decades there enough many times, 17, 18 times, so I'm very familiar with the landscape, but this was the unique trip to the north of Israel, to the base of Mount Hermon, where there's an elaborate Druze village rising layer by layer, climbing a wedding cake to the top. And then there's a parking lot, and I was invited into the home of one of the leadership. They were very generous people, very excited to represent to me with the risks they were under. This is within the last 5 years. And what we were looking at was outside that parking lot I mentioned was a watchtower looking down from, I'd say, about a quarter mile up on the side of Mount Hermon, looking down on the Druze village. That watchtower, off and on, was occupied by the Syrian National Army, Assad's army. Because the civil war was underway, there was no one in it at the moment. But that Druze village was entirely vulnerable to an attack from Syria. That was sovereign Syria I was standing at the edge of. There was a cyclone fence, some barbed wire, and that watchtower looking on the village. So the Druze living in Israel are exceedingly vulnerable at that point. The Druze, however, live in several states of vulnerability. And I tell that story because I don't see how you could possibly provide security unless you do, as the IDF has now done, take possession of a buffer zone between the border with Syria and some part of the plain that rolls into Damascus. Ahmed, having shed myself of the anecdote of, wow, this is rough, we now know that the Druze have been attacked by some aspect of the so-called new Syrian government. What do we know about that attack? What triggered it? What are the consequences of it right now? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. So this attack happened on April 29th. There was a voice recording, or an alleged voice recording, of a Druze spiritual leader insulting Prophet Muhammad, which led many tribesmen in Syria to go and attack a Druze suburb south of Damascus. So there were clashes between tribesmen and some of the Druze militias, which led the Syrian army, which is mainly composed of Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, to go into the suburb and try to end the clashes. What happened is that some of these Druze militias ambushed the Syrian military, and it led to a bigger escalation, which led Israel to intervene and conduct multiple airstrikes against the Syrian army, killing one general service member. The clashes were solved 2 days after between the government and some of the Druze leadership in the area. They decided that the Druze militias will give back their weapons However, Druze factions will be providing security in these areas and not the Syrian government to avoid further conflict.
One detail, who are the Druze and where do they live? How widespread are their villages? Because they're an ancient tribe.
So, how far in history do I have to go back to tell the story of the Druze? Primarily, there are about 700,000 in Syria. There's also a sizable community in Israel, in Lebanon, and a smaller community of about 32,000 in Jordan. But focusing on the ones in Syria, they're mainly concentrated in southern Syria, on the border with Jordan and Israel. The province of Suwayda, which borders Jordan, holds the majority. There's a community in the Qunaitra province, which borders the Golan Heights. There's a big community around Damascus, and there's a smaller community in Idlib where Ahmed al-Shara or Abu Muhammad al-Julani used to rule HTS in that small enclave. So they're as I said, they're mainly concentrated in southern Syria, which has been their home for decades now. The Suwayda province is 99% Druze. The city of Suwayda is a major stronghold, and these areas have resisted Ahmed al-Shara's rule since he took over power in December 2024.
Bill, you have a question for Ahmed.
Yes. Hello, Ahmed. The Israelis have encouraged the Druze to take up arms against the new Syrian government. Are the Druze a monolithic group in Syria? Do they have a singular view of Israel? And do they want Israeli protection?
So some factions do and some factions don't. I think one mistake that the Israelis have done is that they've tried to group the Druze as a unified group that wants Israeli intervention and that rejects the rule of Ahmed al-Shara. But that is false. The Druze have three spiritual leaders in Syria, and one of them, named Hikmet al-Hijri, is one of the big advocates for resisting the state. I mean, he's never explicitly supported Israel, but some of his militiamen and the factions that are aligned with him have voiced their support for Israeli intervention. Other spiritual leaders have advocated for more inclusion or an integration with the new Syrian state. And that has caused internal clashes within the Druze community itself. Not military clashes, but they've voiced disagreements towards the next steps for the Druze community. One thing that is for sure, and I've mentioned this in the article, is that when Israel was trying to encourage the Druze to resist, or that they were saying that they will protect the Druze, there was some person put an Israeli flag in the main square in Suwayda, the Druze majority town. And 2 minutes later, someone took down the flag and burned it. And I think that's a great example of showcasing the divisions within the Druze community in regards to their views towards Israel.
Israel's commitment to the Druze, and we talked about the protection, but is it uniform throughout the several states you named where the Druze exist? In other words, the Druze in Lebanon or the Druze in Jordan, if they come under attack from some aspect of the Syrian government, are the Israelis committed to protecting those Druze, or just the Druze of the borderland between Israel and Syria? Do we have any confirmation?
I think it seems to be exclusive to the Druze in Syria. And why? Because when Israel took over the Golan Heights in 1967, there was also a Druze community in the Golan Heights that were Syrian. And these guys are not similar to the Druze in Israel who serve in the army. The Druze in the Golan Heights were still maintained a Syrian identity. They were very nationalistic towards Syria. However, they're integrating more into the Israeli state. And I think the Druze community in the Golan Heights were voicing their concerns for their brethren in Syria. And that's why Israel was, the Israeli government were making these statements about protecting the Druze. The relationship between the Druze in Israel and the Druze in Lebanon is different. The Druze in Lebanon mainly, I mean, their leadership are, I wouldn't say, I mean, they're anti-Israel basically. So when it comes to the Syrian Druze, there's bloodline, there's a connection, there's familial ties, there's tribal affiliations, and that's why Israel was concentrated its efforts exclusively to the Druze in Syria.
Bill, you have a question.
Yes. As part of President Trump's requirement to lift sanctions on Syria, he said that he wanted President Ahmed al-Shara to expel foreign terrorist organizations. Shara, who of course has led al-Qaeda's branch in Syria, he relies on these foreign terrorist groups to serve as his jackboots. Mm-hmm. He's resisted this. And at the end of last month, Shara integrated one of these foreign terrorist organizations, the Turkestan Islamic Party, into the Syrian military. What does this say about Shara's reliance on these foreign terrorist organizations to keep him in power? Of course, the Turkestan Islamic Party is, you know, a part of al-Qaeda's network. So it speaks a lot about what this group is and who Shara really is, despite wearing his suit.
Well, first of all, it seems like there were no conditions given to Ahmed al-Shara for sanctions relief. These were simple asks, and that I don't think the Americans hinted that they would be monitoring his, removal of foreign fighters from the Syrian army. But what it reveals is that Ahmed al-Shara trusts that these foreign fighters are loyal to him. The Turkestan Islamic Party has been part of the HTS network since the early days of the war, the Syrian civil war. So I think this is another step towards consolidating power and securing that, or people would say coup-proofing the Syrian regime. He trusts the foreign fighters to protect him. And he can use them for objectives that where he can't rely on other Syrian groups. There's been unconfirmed reports that the foreign fighters took part in the violence in the Syrian coast, and that's another example of him relying on these foreign fighters to secure his objectives. He still doesn't trust a lot of the Syrian factions that were integrated into the army, especially the ones who are aligned with Turkey. And it seems to be that these foreign fighters will act to counter the distrust he has for the other groups.
We're speaking with Ahmed Sharari of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, of the darkness visible that is Syria. We've attended to the Druze vulnerability. When we come back, there are other groups that are at extreme risk, and there are major powers present. How does that sort itself out with these conversations that are taking place between Washington and al-Shara? Bill Raggio, my colleague and co-host of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. I'm John Batchelor.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals go wild. Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.